Good afternoon, my name is Mike Mulvaney. I'm going to be talking very quickly today about conservation tillage effects on carbon, nitrogen, and mass loss from various organic residues. We all know that conservation tillage can reduce erosion rates, improve soil organic matter, soil moisture retention, improve your soil structure, so we won't go too much into that. But the problem, particularly for organic producers, is how can they adopt conservation tillage without and obtain sufficient weed suppression without the use of tillage or herbicides. So if you're an organic producer, you've got a limited toolbox. You can hand weed, you can use flame weeding, but one possible solution may involve the use of high biomass cover crops, which can then be killed using timely crimp and roll technologies, then plant into that residue, and you can achieve more weed suppression later in the growing season by the application of additional organic mulches. Now, if you're going to apply organic mulches, you can either purchase them and transport them to the farm at additional cost, or you may be able to produce them on the farm itself. And if you're going to produce them on the farm itself, maybe you can utilize invasive perennial leguminous species such as Sericea lespidiza or mimosa prunings. So that way you may be ridding yourself of some invasive species at the same time being able to utilize them on your field. Obviously, this is more for smaller growers. This isn't going to be on a large commercial scale. So the lespidiza and mimosa end up being treatments in this study, which you'll see later. So the rationale here is, what about the nutrient release rates from those killed cover crops and organic mulches? So it's important to understand the synchronicity between the nutrient release rates and crop uptake. So we're interested in finding out how tillage affects those nutrient release rates and the persistence of those organic residues. The objective of our experiment was therefore to quantify the mass loss and the nutrient release rates from various decomposing organic residues under simulated conservation and conventional tillage. That kind of information should help producers make more informed decisions about residue management. The experiment took place at the E.V. Smith Research Center in central eastern Alabama. The site was under no-till for at least 3 years prior to the initiation of the experiment. The residues that we used were Sericea lespidiza, also known as Lespidiza cuneata, mimosa prunings, which is julibrissin, Albisa julibrissin, oat straw, and forage soybean. We're using forage soybean in this case to investigate its potential as a summer cover crop. This is not a soybean that's intended for use as a grain crop. The residues were then packed into nylon mesh litter bags at the equivalent rate of 6.7 megagrams per hectare, brought to the field, arranged in a randomized split plot design. The bags were either buried at 10 centimeters deep to represent conventional tillage or surface placed to represent conservation tillage. They were then periodically retrieved from the field up to a year after placement. The bags were placed on October 7th of 2007. This is part of a larger collard production study, so we're looking at no-till collard production. That's why we're applying these mulches in the fall season. The samples were then brought back to the lab. They were dried, they were weighed, analyzed for total carbon and nitrogen, and then we accounted for any contamination within the soil bags, within the bags by soil particles by determining the ash-free dry weight. The statistics were done at the 95% confidence level. We used double exponential decay models to describe the decay patterns. The reason that double exponential decay patterns are particularly relevant for organic decomposition systems is that this first portion of the exponential decay model is meant to describe the labile portion of the residue, so that portion which is easily decomposed, so your starches and proteins and fractions of that nature. And then the second portion of the exponential decay model models the recalcitrant portion, so your fats, tannins, lignins, and materials of that nature. So here we have the mass remaining from the various organic residues. On the y-axis, we've got the mass remaining in megagrams per hectare. On the x-axis, we've got the time in days after placement of those various organic residues. On the left, we've got buried residue, and on the right, we have surface residue. So the first thing we'll notice here is that, particularly in this labile portion, you're noticing a much faster decomposition rate in comparison to the surface residue. In contrast to that, we see here on the recalcitrant portion, the slope of the lines really isn't that much different whether it's buried or surface placed, with the exception of straw. So we're really losing the main part of the mass here in the initial several weeks after placement. Now, if you're a producer, you're probably interested in knowing how much mass is going to be remaining at spring planting. So we placed these on October 7th. Let's call spring planting May 1st. That's day 207 of this study. So on 204 on the study. So in this case, we'll look at two extreme examples. Let's look at straw. For straw, you're looking at spring planting, you've got about 4.5 megagrams per hectare residue remaining on that surface. If we bury the residue, you got about 2.8, 2.7 megagrams per hectare remaining. So you're looking at a difference of, an appreciable difference, almost 2 megagrams per hectare difference if you leave that residue on the surface. The other extreme example would be soybeans. Soybeans obviously decomposing a lot faster, has a lower C-to-N ratio, but you're looking here at a difference of about 0.5 megagrams per hectare. So you're still looking at appreciable amounts, even for fast decomposing residues. The other thing I want to point out is we're next going to overlay this with a carbon remaining. What I want to point out here is in this buried section, you're going to notice at the end of a year, we've got residue remaining in the order of Lespedeza, mimosa, straw, and soybean. And we've got this crossover here, we've got this crossover here, and now let's overlay that with carbon, and you notice a very similar decay patterns here. So you've got that same crossover, those two crossovers are happening here. At the end of a year, we still have Lespedeza, mimosa, straw, and soybean. So what's going on here is obviously the majority of the mass is going to be carbon. That carbon, when we bury it, has intimate contact with the soil microbial community. Microbes are acting on that, metabolizing that carbon, respiring it as CO2. Well, if I'm a producer, particularly if I'm an organic producer, I'd much rather have that carbon sequestered as soil organic matter rather than having it be respired as CO2. So that kind of data, may be used in some future era where producers might be compelled to participate in some kind of carbon market. That this may be able to provide some kind of carbon offset or a carbon credit. Depending, but that's more speculation since we're not quite there with the carbon markets. We'll look at straw here. So you're looking at a difference of about 800 kilograms per hectare more carbon remaining at spring planting from surface placed straw versus about 400 kilograms per hectare for soybean. So 400 kilograms per hectare of carbon, even from soybean. Depending on what the market price of carbon is, that could be appreciable. But again, from the perspective of an organic farmer, that's soil organic matter accumulation. Nitrogen is going to be obviously of interest to producers given the cost of nitrogen fertilizer these days. The first thing I'll point out here is that straw doesn't really have much carbon to begin nitrogen to begin with, so you're not really, double exponential decay models aren't really holding that well for straw. But if we look at the other residues, again, you'll notice a faster decomposition rate, particularly here with the soybean residue in those first weeks compared to surface residue. But if we look at the other two residues, if we look at mimosa, mimosa is retaining about 125 kilograms per hectare at spring planting. So that's potentially available nitrogen available at spring planting. So you're looking at, compared to buried residue, you're looking at probably 80 kilograms of nitrogen potentially available per hectare. Compare that to soybean residue, you're still looking at about 40 kilograms per hectare increase in potentially available nitrogen at spring planting from soybean residue. So here is the actual, this is a table showing the increase that you'll gain in mass and carbon and nitrogen if you retain that if you retain your residues on the soil surface versus if we bury it. So straw, you're looking at 2.2 megagrams per hectare more mass remaining, but that translates to about 880 kilograms of carbon remaining increase if we leave straw residue on the soil surface. Again, soybean, 400 kilograms per hectare. Decomposes pretty quick, but still you're getting 400 kilograms per hectare more carbon if you leave that stuff on the soil surface. Nitrogen. Mimosa prunings are interesting. 50 kilograms per hectare more nitrogen potentially available at spring planting. Well, That's great to say that that's potentially available, but what we really want to know is how much is actually going to be released over that growing season. So if we look next, let's call a growing season May 1 to October 7. You'll notice here that buried residue, this is nitrogen mineralized in kilograms per hectare, buried residue for mimosa is releasing 26 kilograms per hectare versus surface residue, which is only releasing 20. Well, that's not really surprising because surface residue is decomposing at a slower rate. But what happens if during the next growing season? So let's assume that the decay models hold for a number of years. We don't know that. We should conduct further studies to investigate that. But assuming that the models hold for additional years, we start to see something interesting happening. We start to see that in the second year during that growing season, you've got roughly equal amounts of nitrogen being mineralized. And during the third year, we're actually getting almost double the amount of nitrogen being mineralized. So we can actually, if we had annual application, so applied every year, you could sum all of those, because you'd have season 1, 2, and 3 all decomposing at the same time, and you could sum all of these, and you'd see that you have roughly the same amounts of nitrogen contribution from Lespedeza and Mimosa, but you're actually getting more from soybean if you leave it on the surface. So those are interesting results, given that we've got leguminous species with the Lespedeza and the Mimosa, but they're also woody species as well. So you're getting retention, mass retention, and you're getting nitrogen contribution. So in conclusion, we find that mass and nutrient loss is faster with buried residue than it is with surface residue, especially in that labile portion. Surface residue, as well as buried residue, can both act as slow-release fertilizers. They can accumulate soil organic matter and nitrogen over time. The one caveat is that we're not determining nutrient fate in this study, so we're not saying how much nitrogen has been leached and how much has been taken up. We're just determining how much is potentially available. So with that, I'd like to thank you, my major professor, Dr. Wes Wood, his technician, Brenda, Sarah for funding the project, and Auburn University for giving me a fine education. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, say again. The question is what type of soil? That was a Wickham fine sandy loam, 0 to 2% slope. So it was a flat.
The
depth of incorporation was 10 centimeters depth for the buried residue. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Your carbon remaining, you dug up the bags and you measured the carbon and the residue was left. You mentioned that, you know, carbon sequestration and everything. How do you know the carbon that lost, how much was actually CO2 and what might have been stabilized outside the bag?
The question is what percentage of that carbon could have been stabilized outside of the bag? I would tend to think that the microbes that are acting on that residue are actually acting on the residue. So you're not talking about mineralized nitrogen that reprecipitates outside of the bag, and then becomes a more complicated form of nitrogen. So I would probably say a small amount of carbon would have been formed as a more complex agent outside of the bag. I would probably say that the more complex organic molecules are probably being formed within the bag itself and acting on while being acted on the residue. Yes, sir.
You initiated this in October because of the winter grass and winter polyploid. Could you speculate what would happen if you had initiated this for a summer annual production system?
The question is, would I expect different decomposition rates if the litter bags were placed earlier in the season, say during spring planting? I would say yes. You'd probably, given that, especially depends on your location, depends on rainfall patterns, things like that. But just given the higher temperatures, you would probably find faster decomposition rates. You'd probably find increased differences between conservation and conventional tillage because particularly in that labile portion, with that temperature change, it's going to be a lot more. The temperature change is going to be a lot more enhanced and increased decomposition during that time. So I would say yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank Michael for his presentation.